Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Joel here. I'm just normally start the show a little differently. Instead, we're just going to get right to the interview with our headliner this week, Joe Mackey. Now, some of you might even say, haven't I listened to the show already? Well, what happened was I couldn't get Joe Mackey. I didn't think the timing was going to work out. So I did an interview with Mike Cronin. He's our feature act this weekend. Mike is super funny. Stick around on this show. You'll hear Mike. In fact, you'll hear what is the original version of the show as soon as you hear this interview with me and Joe Mackey. I think it's worth it. Joe is fascinating to me. I think he's one of the most brilliant minds in comedy. I just love the guy. I was really excited to talk to him. So I'm adding it on to the beginning of the show, a little bonus. We're going to throw it over to that interview. Then you'll hear the beginning of the show proper with Mike Cronin as my guest. You'll even hear a clip of Joe Mackey's comedy in that, so stick around for that. I think these are both two really good interviews. You're going to learn a lot about these guys. You're going to learn a lot about comedy. I know I did. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I had making these. So here's Joe Mackey. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to finally have on my phone here Mr. Joe Mackey. How you doing tonight, Joe?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. This was a call that took some doing, so I'm glad you did that for me, and then I had to tell you I wasn't ready. We were sort of being very polite but rude at the same time.
Busy schedules.
We had a podcast at the club tonight, and we're getting more of those.
Oh yeah.
And they're kind of not my favorite shows.
I think they suck. It's like you're going to see why would I go to a comedy club to see an unplanned comedy show? I could go see a planned comedy show.
Exactly. But let me ask before you talk shit on this one, we had, maybe you've been a guest on this one. I'm just guessing here. Because it's the Don't Call Me White Girl podcast. Have you been a guest on that one?
Never heard of it. And good for them doing what they do.
Exactly.
And maybe it's fine. But I've been on those live podcast shows myself.
Yeah.
And I'd rather be at a comedy show or telling my own jokes.
You'd rather be anywhere else than the live podcast.
Yeah. I just think it's not better than the jokes you wrote.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Exactly. You got great jokes, man. You're one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
And I've told you that. We've met. I worked at the club a long time. I've driven you to the hotel. Done that one. Yeah. We had that pleasure.
Yep. I think they recall like the cab driver left or something.
It might have.
I'm going home.
Yeah, we used to keep the comics in sort of a remote location in Troy, but now we've got a nice convenient one right in downtown Royal Oak for you now.
Yep.
And you'll be there. It'll be good. No awkward rides with me. Just this awkward talk.
It's shocking how often you get to the club and the worst part is getting from the hotel to the club.
I know. I try not to be that guy because, I work at the club. I'm a comic myself, and I can relate on some level. But there's also guys that just don't want to talk. They're done. They've done two shows. Yeah, they're tired. It's over.
Well, it's not even that. It's like the one club you used to have to use the hotel shuttle.
Yeah, okay.
I remember, I went down, an hour before the show. I'm like, how do I book the shuttle? I was like, oh, they'll be back soon, and they got back when the first act was on, and the club's like, where are you? And I'm like, well, the shuttle just got here. So it's like,
they're dropping people off at Applebee's, and then they're going to be back for the headliner from the club.
yep.
But I know that's an awkward thing as a road comic is the you never know who picks you up from the airport and, all that stuff.
Yep.
I'm sure you got some stories there, but you don't have to share them. That was a good story about the shuttle. That was a good story.
It was a great story.
And what was I saying? I actually recorded a podcast today with the feature act Mike Cronin, and we were talking about you.
Oh, that name rings a bell.
Does it? Mike's originally from, I think, Cincinnati, but he's played Cleveland. He's played Philly. I know he did a special at Helium. He's a good dude.
Oh, cool.
You're going to like Mike if you never met him. He said he's a big fan of yours.
Oh, well, good. I hope it's a good. Yeah, hope it's going to be a good weekend.
Got a nice lineup, and we were talking about you and you know, I actually he had never met you, and I said, "Well, I've met Joe," and I said, "I my thing," and just from knowing you a little bit off stage, Joe Mackey on stage, kind of Joe Mackey off stage. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think a comedy's supposed to be, you know, pretty, you know, when you're writing your own material, I'm not playing a character. I'm just an odd guy. So I can't be anyone else than who I am.
That's it, man. I was watching, because I pulled a clip for the show, and I'm playing this clip, and it's hilarious. We'll talk about that in a second. But I don't know that you blinked for this minute clip.
Yeah, I tend to do that a lot.
Really?
I'm just paying attention to it. It's like I would have to like think of it. Like I'm focused on
concentrating
on the joke. Yeah, sorry about. I don't know if you hear that rattling. Wow, the wind really kicked up. But
that's all right.
Yeah, I'm focused on the joke at the moment. Not even thinking about that.
Yeah,
but yeah, a lot of people have noticed that.
It's different though. I like it. It's it's super funny. Like, I don't know what you did before stand-up comedy, but, you know, I would imagine you're somewhere and they're going, you should be a comedian. I'm guessing you've heard that in your life.
I always say it's the career that chooses you because, like, if you have to love it and you have to be good at it and you have to be able to put up with a lot of crap, even if you are good at it for a long time before you really get a chance to succeed. So. It's not something you go in to be famous. You have to really like doing it.
Yeah, well, you're great at it, man. You're
no, thank you.
I was just talking. I was talking to Jeff Allen on Sunday night.
Oh, I ran into him. Yeah, I ran into him Sunday.
He was telling me stories about you guys in Cleveland together.
Yeah, what a brilliant thing he's doing the shows at 4 p.m. because just the way the world is now, after the pandemic, the late show just became a harder sell. People started going to bed early. Yeah. Restaurants are closing early. Supermarkets that were 24 hours are closed at 10. So it's like, we got to break people out of that habit of going to bed early and get them out to the late show. But while they're going to the earlier shows, like doing the 4 o'clock on Sunday, I'm like, that's a good idea.
Jeff was saying, he goes, my crowd needs to be able to, they don't drive at night. They need to be able to be home before the sun is down.
Yeah. And even if you don't, you're younger, it's like if there's no sports game that you're into on Sunday or like going out at 4 and being back at 6 or 7, it's a lot better for a lot of people than being back at 9 or 10 because you still got your regular Monday coming up.
And it's good. And I like that he was saying, too, that, you know, you're doing some appearances on Fox News and getting known for that. And I said, well, that's great because. Completely different acts. I mean, completely different styles. Both you guys, both really funny guys, but you have some commonality in an audience apparently now.
Yeah, I guess so. I am on the show Gutfeld, which is like a comedy panel discussion. Mm-hmm. If you don't know it, but I kind of have no rules for as to what my show is. It's like people are always saying, "Oh, you got to find your voice." It's like if you write this and it conflicts, don't use it. I didn't care about any of that. Like, I just thought if I think it's funny, I'll say it. And if it gets a laugh, I'll say it. All these people who make rules for how you do comedy usually didn't do comedy. So it's really not that important.
Let me ask this, and I don't know the man or really how the show works. When you're on a show like Gutfeld, which I know is a popular show, do they say, hey, we're picking you because we know your politics leans a certain way, or they just want you to be you?
They just want you to be you. No one ever tells you what to say.
That's great.
We have comedians on a lot, and some of them are you know, pretty left. But if you're willing to just tell jokes and have fun, I think it can be fun for anyone.
Yeah, that's great. Terrific, man. And then I wanted to ask you this about your comedy, because as I'm watching this clip, I think I played the one about not bringing a baby into this world. I'm not going to do the whole bit. People will hear it later in the show. And I was just listening, and I some of your other bits, especially like the baby Hitler thing, which I think is one of the best bits I've ever heard. You have this, you get people on your side with logic before you hit them with the punchline. It's so great. How did you come up with that style for jokes or even just those particular jokes? It's so good.
I write with a lot of logic. I used to do a lot of analogies when I was in elementary school and philosophy in college, which wasn't that helpful. Yeah. But like, I don't know. I'm a linear thinker, and I think a lot of comedy is just an argument.
Yeah.
Where you twist the logic a different way than you're normally hearing it. So it's like, okay, here's an idea. Here's what most people think. Yeah. And here's another supporting fact, and then boom, you twist the logic at the very end in a way that they don't predict. And that usually is the ingredients for a good joke.
Yeah. It's like, I want to disagree with you, but after all of that, I can't. I concede with my laughter and my applause to your thoughts, Joe.
Yeah, and I find a lot of times where there's a conflict when you're doing a joke about politics or current events, it's where one of the things up front isn't a stipulated fact. So then you're trying to get people to agree with logic where they don't have the same foundation. So you got to make that broad enough that people are like, yeah, I'm willing to go along with that. Because I want the jokes to be funny for everybody. Because I laugh at jokes that I don't agree with. It's just, if the joke's funny, it's funny. If it's not, I think I could be on the jury of a comedian I didn't agree with their politics of.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a fun thing to watch a comedian who makes you think something different. You know, you went to the show and your eyes were opened a little bit, at least to a fact, without, sometimes it's boring, I think, when a comic just has everybody that agrees with them. You know what I mean? There's some of those guys that are so right on, and then people are cheering and applauding everything they say.
Yeah, it's like I support gay marriage, which isn't, I don't think, a courageous stand in 2024. And it certainly isn't in Manhattan. I saw comedians say, like, I think homosexuals get married. Clap it up. Clap for that. And I was like, are you kidding me? You're in New York City. It's like, that's the easiest stand anyone ever took. Like, and the joke really didn't need it. And I guess it's, I also think it's kind of fun to take a side that I don't even agree with if I think I came up with a fun punchline.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It's just like my ultimate goal is to have fun and for the crowd to have fun. Yeah. And a lot of ways you can do that is just by twisting the logic in a way that they don't expect.
Nice. That's a good way to put it, man.
Thanks.
So good. How long have you been doing comedy? When did you start?
Really, I did a couple open mics here and there, but I moved to New York in 2006. Took a class and then, really was running from there.
That was it. That's great. That's good to know. Because I teach comedy class and I tell you, I said, look, you don't have to take a comedy class, but I think it can help you. I think it'll kind of get you on the way having somebody to bounce your jokes off of.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think it's going to make you worse.
Yeah.
And, it's like you're still going to be creative. You're creative. You're going to figure out how to break the rules once you're pretty good. Mm-hmm. But, just like, someone taught Picasso how to hold a paintbrush, start. And then he was off and running. And I think the big problem some people have with comedy classes is that people were trading off their name because they worked for something. And like, I can, it's like, if you want to do this, you have, it's really going to help if you took this class, but it really wouldn't. Yeah. Or people overpromised who was going to watch the graduation show. Oh. It's like, oh, we're the agents there. And I'm like, I don't really think agents, like, it's hard to get an agent to go to, like, your headlining set at Montreal.
Yeah,
like, it's
right?
they're not just going to open mics. Yeah. It's just not a real thing.
We'll make 10% of this guy's bookings.
Yeah.
10% of nothing for several years.
It's like they don't want to waste their time either. So they're going to let the independent shows and then the clubs figure out who's funny.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be like, okay, this is a good show. I'm going to go to that. That's it's kind of sucks that, like, people are kind of embellished to take advantage of people who are, the stream of being a comic. It's just, it's like, I think classes can be great. It's the overpromising that I don't like.
I always tell my students, I say, when you're ready for an agent, they'll find you.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
If you're making money, they're going to find you and take their chunk off of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one who's really funny, like, I mean, I guess it happens, but like most of the time it's like, yeah, someone's going to be interested in you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're doing so good, man. You haven't been at our club. I don't think you've been at our club since the pandemic, have you?
I made it here once a couple of years ago. Yeah.
A few years ago. And I think certainly people are waiting to see you. It's going to be an exciting weekend. What do you do on the road to stay busy? Do you do anything? Do you write jokes during the day?
I write jokes during the day. I write for Gutfeld Remote Thursday or Friday.
There you go.
I'm working on a video game project with a company called Lethos. So
okay.
It's just like I keep busy. And the thing I like to do around town is I like to go walk the town.
Yeah.
I've done so many tours that like all the tourist things when I go to the city.
Right.
It's like I find you get like a better, more ideas go through your head if you're just walking around. Yeah. Hopping into a coffee shop or going into the park. It's like, I don't know. It's like, it kind of sparks more thoughts than, you got to check out this donut shop. It's like,
I like what you're doing. And I think that's great. I think Royal Oak's the place to do it. We got all kind of coffee shops. We got parks.
Nice little town. Yeah.
And Detroit weather this weekend should be really good for you.
Oh, nice. I'm looking forward to that. Cause it was like, beautiful here, and then it really turned south today.
It rained a little yesterday, but now we're enjoying what we got. 78 degrees in late April. We'll take it.
Yeah, but it's going to be miserable during all of my shows, so you might as well be inside.
Oh, yeah. By the way, what I mean by that is it's been a nice night to go out and see some comedy this weekend with Joe Mackey.
No local sporting events are on TV either, so it's like, want to check out the show.
You know, we had hundreds of thousands of people in town for the NFL draft last weekend.
Oh, it was in Detroit.
It was in Detroit. And we still had amazing crowds that came out all weekend. They weren't football fans. They just wanted to see a good show. We had Ian Bagg last week. This show, every bit is good.
Oh, nice. Ew, did he do a good mix of jokes and crowd work? Because he was really good at like some organic crowd work.
Yeah, he does both. He'll go in and out of material. He'll do the crowd work that is, you know, different. He doesn't just ask people what they do for a living or, you know, how they met. He's asking them more sort of conceptual things, and it's brilliant. He thinks really fast, that guy.
I always thought it was a different take on crowd work.
It is, but at the same time, his audience now knows him from those little Instagram clips and the TikToks.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing that. How much of that are you doing?
I hate it, but I do it as much as I can. But like, I hate it, but it's also, it's like a double-edged sword. It's like, I see the benefit where you can kind of skip some gatekeepers if you're, you know, good. Cause there were some comics I thought were great that really weren't getting an industry shot, like Andrew Schultz.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like it's a way to get around that. It's just like, you take the good with the bad. It's like there's a lot of crowd work clips that are just mediocre.
Even if the clip's good, when you see the whole show might stink, you know, even hour of that. We had one guy, and I'll tell you what, he drew so well, never seen this guy. And, you know, the next, he pretty much sold it out on like a Sunday night. The guy comes back next time, and it was like less than half the people. He didn't have the goods.
Look, if they can get that audience that way and then sustain it, good for them.
You got to sustain it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You want them to come back.
Yep.
You already got their money. They're there once. You got to get them to come back.
Yeah. I feel like you're always auditioning for your next thing. So that's a good thing to keep you working.
Well, I'm super excited that you're coming, Joe. This is a highlight for me. And again, we made this work after I'd already done the show. I could have said, I could have told your agent, no, I'm good. I got a show in the can. And I said, I got to get Joe Mackey.
It sounds good, yeah.
You're one of my favorites. I think everybody, if you haven't seen, again, stick around. I play a clip of Joe in a couple of seconds here on the show, and I want you to come out and see that. How do you, and I also saw this on the clip that we pulled. Joe Mackey in a suit on stage. I like that.
I don't know what clip you have. So
we had a clip.
I must have been doing something.
We had a clip.
We
play the. It might have been. We play the video before the shows. You know, like for the last couple of weeks before the show starts, they've been watching clips of the comics.
Oh, okay.
And they had one of you in a suit, and I thought you looked good up there.
Yeah, that must have been the Tonight Show.
Yeah. And but not a suit guy now. That's not a change.
Yeah, once in a while, it's a big deal. Like I hosted Gutfeld on April 22nd,
oh, wow.
And that was my first time doing it. And I was like, I'm going to wear a suit.
Yeah,
but very rarely. Someone told me early on, it's like when you're on stage, it's hard to be comfortable. So you might as well be comfortable where you can.
Interesting.
So I dress, you know, comfortably, and usually back with T-shirt and jeans.
Nice. Well, Joe. It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to me. I know I made you wait around a little bit while I was hustling the podcast fans into a line.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. We'll see you this weekend, man.
Sounds good. Okay, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm Joel Fragomeni, your host for today's talk about what's going on at the Comedy Castle this week. A fun week. Joe Mackey will be our headliner. If you don't know Joe was on Last Comic Standing and did very well on there. He's also had several Comedy Central specials. Very unique guy. Very unique performer. We'll hear some Joe Mackey here in a second, just so you know, because the interview today is going to be with the feature act, a guy named Mike Cronin. And we'll talk more about that, too. Mike's headlined our club. We love Mike as well. He's going to do a great job opening up for Joe this weekend. But let's talk about what's going on. Starting on Wednesday, May the 1st, open mic night at the Comedy Castle. Always fun, the open mic night. We got some professionals, some amateurs, all doing short sets. It's always a good time at open mic night. That's at 7:30 on Wednesday. And you can call for a reservation or just show up and buy a ticket. We usually get a nice crowd in there, 50 to 100 maybe. People bring their friends, whatever it is. Yeah, that's who shows up for open mic night. And then we've got Joe Mackey starting on Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. He's also got Friday shows, the 3rd of May, at 7:15 and 9:45. And then Saturday at 7 p.m. and 9:30 with Joe and Mike Cronin, who I interviewed, and we'll talk about in a second. But why don't we listen to a little Joe Mackey? Because it does come up in the Mike Cronin interview. Listen to, here's the start of a bit from it's from YouTube, but it's from his Comedy Central special from a couple of years ago. Here's Joe Mackey.
Went to a wedding a couple of weeks back. I talked to the bride and groom. I said, hey, how long before you two have kids? Because I really don't have any boundaries. And they said they don't want to bring children into the world the way this world is now. I'm like, well, that's a weird thing to say the way the world is now, because by most ways of looking at it, this is the best the world's ever been in history. 200 years ago, if you were very lucky, you were having 15 kids. Most of those kids would die. Most of life was having kids, then watching them die. Then you would die of a disease they prevent now by washing your hands. Being a doctor shouldn't have even been a real thing.
There's some Joe Mackey for you. I mean, it just, that's the way his comedy is. It starts out very logical and then goes on, you know, and so you really, it works your brain out well. And his delivery is great. His voice is sort of high-pitched. He talks about that in his act. I also don't believe that as I'm watching this clip, I don't know that Joe blinked once. I paid 47 seconds of a clip. I did not see a blink. There may be one that I didn't see, as the camera may have been too far away. But Joe's a trip, man. We'll talk. I talked to Mike Cronin a little bit about Joe and his style and why I think those guys work good together. So Mike is a guy, if you don't know Mike Cronin, local guy to Detroit, but he started out in the Cincinnati comedy scene, and he's also done his time in Chicago doing stuff. Him and I really get along. We talk about a lot of the same stuff. We like the same stuff. We talk about comic book movies, and he does a podcast about that that I'll link to in the description here of the show over at comedycastle.com if you want to listen to his movie, comic book movie podcast. But we talk about why those aren't as good as they used to be. Funny story about Dwayne Johnson came out today. Article, and I read that. We were talking about that one. Maybe I'll even link to that. Yeah, go over to Comedy Castle Podcast. I'll throw a link up to that, too. But Mike's a great guy, super funny. You know, again, I always say kind of an everyman. You know, he's a guy. He's got the kids. He's got the he's engaged, going to be married. You know, Mike's a but it's funny and smart. And just kind of makes you smile, his take on life. He'll tell you about why it got hard to, you know, talk about, you know, is this comedy darker than it used to be? He was told that. His comedy was darker than it used to be. Or it's so dark. Why is that? We'll talk about that, too. It's a great talk. I had a lot of fun talking to Mike. I hope you enjoy this talk. And come out this weekend for Joe and Mike Cronin, and you hear us talk about Johnny Mockney as well, who's the MC. Really great lineup. So let's throw this over to my interview with Mike Cronin. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line here, this weekend's feature, it's Mike Cronin. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited about this weekend.
Yeah, me too.
To have you back. It's good to be back. Were you the headliner the last time you were at our club?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, you were the headliner, and then you come back to feature. I like that. No ego.
Yeah, no ego. Well,
I like to say
money
no ego
more than I have an ego.
Hey, money over ego in this business, man. That's probably the way to go. But but yeah, I mean, it's great to have you. I think you're a great fit with Joe Mackey too, because he's very not unlike you, very inventive. And different, although Joe is a little eccentric.
Yeah, I kind of get that impression. I've never met him, but yeah. I've been a fan of his since the last Comic Standing days.
Yeah, he's terrific, but he's a little different. And you know, you know how he's like, hey, there's this guy, and he's on stage, and you know, and then he gets off, and he's just like regular guy. Joe Mackey's the same guy off stage.
Is he? Oh,
yeah,
good.
I drove him around one night. Perfectly pleasant and funny and all the things you like in a person. But, you know, that voice is the voice, you know?
Yeah.
The voice is the voice. Yeah, I worked with Gilbert Gottfried a few times. And
same, yeah.
Yeah, and Gilbert had a maybe, like, he went up an octave, I think, on stage.
Oh, definitely.
Did you believe that? Yeah, because I mean, Gilbert was still, you know, kind of a weird guy off stage too. But he had sort of a stage voice. That's Joe's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe's been at the club before. He's great. So.
Yeah, I've seen Bobcat Goldthwait too, and I mean, he's dropped the voice obviously now.
He doesn't even do. He doesn't even try to do the voice.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know. And either way, it's fine as long as it's funny. That's the thing. But I think, I think that's just how Joe is. But like I said, it's going to be a real fun weekend. Although I think you are not the eccentric. I think you're more the everyman.
I hope so.
Very clever, though. That's the thing I like about your comedy. Do you feel that? Do you get that compliment often?
Yeah, I do.
That's good. Well, that's because what it is. I'm not completely off base.
Yeah, it's funny. Recently, I got a compliment I've never gotten before, which is just because my act is evolving. But they said I really appreciated your dark humor.
Oh,
I was like, wow, because I'm always, you know, I'm kind of a bubbly, silly guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess dark just like to some people, maybe darkness is something that's just I don't know weirdness. You know what I mean? I don't think you're dark at all.
Well, yeah, my humor isn't dark, but I am talking now about like my dad dying, I had a dog die.
Maybe I haven't heard the set in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a minute since I've been there.
Yeah. Get your tickets this weekend. You can hear about Mike's dad dying
It's great.
Get y'all fired up for the weekend here. Yeah. But your dad was a big part of your show, right? I mean, there were plenty of jokes about your dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the thing I say in the joke is he was most of my act. Now I don't know what to do.
It's great. You know, I had a great relationship with my dad. And my dad was a funny guy and did lots of dumb, funny dad stuff. Not one joke about him. I don't know why that, and he's gone now too, and I don't know why people say, like, why don't you talk about your dad, and your dad had dementia and he was this hilarious guy even with dementia, and I go, I don't know, it's just not a thing for me. I haven't found that voice yet.
That is a funny thing. Like, I have my cousins and family, we have funny family stories, and I've tried to bring them to the stage and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, that's the thing. Every family gathering, and even till I was at one Sunday, and they were like, "You gotta tell the stories about the Thanksgiving with your uncle," and I'm like, "I don't know, and I see people telling those stories, and they kill.
Right? Yeah. Or have you gotten like a story you've told before, and then they get you to retell it? And then they're not happy with how you told it.
Well, like, that's not how you told. And I think for me, that is a lot of it is, you know, I got to face these people again.
Right.
And I think I'd rather just go, those jokes about me jerking off. And those are all made up, you know, and then we'll just move
on. That's a lie. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's all just a persona. I guess it's a fear of a comic, right? Revealing too much of yourself. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess it is. Yeah.
But you're having the great life, very relatable stuff. You got a little baby, which is nice. Yep. Engaged.
Two babies now?
Oh, my God. How long has it been since I've seen you? A big couple years?
Yeah, I think it was Thanksgiving of 22.
Oh, yeah, that's been a while. Well, congratulations on the
Thank
second
you.
Baby. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
9 months and 3 years.
Okay. Well, that's a nice spread, right?
Yeah.
They can do, they'll be into the same things for a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't want them spread out too much. I'm getting married next March.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. So, and then we're going to have a baby, I think.
Great.
I'm either going to die or have a baby. Maybe the same. It could be the same, you know, could be the same year. Could be, you know.
Right.
the baby's been born. How's the mom? She's all right. The dad passed away though.
Dad's dead.
Yeah, dad did. I had so much shit wrong with me last year. It's actually one thing wrong with me, but it continues. Don't get older, Mike. That's my advice.
I'm trying, but I'm failing.
Because I think I'm older than you. Although I think we're still Gen X, right? We're still kind of the same thing there.
Pretty much. I think I'm
are you millennial,
borderline? The oldest millennial,
Are you really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I look at you and go, oh, that's one of my guys. That's the guy.
Yeah.
You can talk about Star Wars with Mike, I'm sure.
Right. I think that's a thing for comics. Like 18 to 55, you're all like, that guy's my age.
God, who are the guys? And I say this with no insult whatsoever. It was... Oh, I forget the guy's name. Oh, he did America's Got Talent, the engineer comedian. We had him in for one night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the complete nerd. Great guy. I wish I knew his name. I'm not going to look it up. Keep the show moving. And he's there with Mike Bobbitt opening. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know Mike, right? So
I love Mike, yeah.
So it's me, Mike, and it was just a Douglas Adams stuff was flying around the green room. And of course that's all stuff from my it started with Star Wars. It went into Douglas Adams and it was like, if you don't know, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You knew that, but maybe some of our audience didn't know that.
Sure,
and I'm like, that's all my stuff. Look at, I part of me is like, look at these two nerds. And then I'm like, oh, I read all those. Those were so great. You know, I'm like, I'm so much cooler than these two guys, and meanwhile I'm absolutely not. Nerds
I've done that where I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're still talking about this, and then I'll correct something they say.
It never leaves you, man. That stuff, whatever you did when you're a kid will stay with you. It's that nostalgia, man.
Definitely,
burnt.
I mean, I do a podcast now with a buddy where we just watch comic book movies.
Oh my God. What's your take on the modern comic book movie? Are people burned out on them?
I think people are definitely burned out, but yeah. I'm still on board. I love them. I do. The ones people don't like.
Do you go to the theater for all of these?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, first of all, you should probably go if you're going to go to it. If you're going to be a comic book, go see it in the theater, because at least it is one of those movies that is better on a big screen. I think we can definitely all agree about that. But yeah, I'm trying to think, maybe the last Spider-Man was probably the last one I saw in the theater anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was good.
Yeah. You saw me, and then you said, we got to go watch Spider-Man.
that was that long ago, huh? Damn. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of, for me, I guess it's funny for me, because I feel like as a kid, because I was just the age of, you know, Star Wars came out, I was 5, and I went to the theater and everything. And for me, comic books didn't hold a lot of appeal because we had all these cool movies.
Yeah.
And for me, I was sort of like, I always was sort of like comic books are boring compared to this media we had coming up, you know?
Yeah.
And so I never got into the comic books themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the movies I did, you know, obviously everyone liked Superman in 78 and all that stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah. They've changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're too interconnected, because when they're interconnected and you miss one, you can't see the next one.
Yeah, well, don't miss one.
It's easy for you to say. Yeah. I guess that is. But I think as each one comes out, there's more and more people that have missed one.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem with them lately, is that the Marvel has had to completely rebuild, and DC they just gave up a long time ago. I mean, they're rebooting with James Gunn, and that'll be good. But all right.
Well, let me ask you a question about DC, just because I was reading an article today. I don't know if you read it, but I'll recommend you read it, and everyone listening read it, because it's absolutely great. Black Adam, this Dwayne The Rock Johnson superhero movie, how bad was that?
See, that was I expected it to be so bad that I kind of enjoyed it.
Did you really? Okay.
And I love that he talks so much trash about how this is the new, most powerful DC character, and the whole shape of the DC universe is going to change. And then they immediately scrap the entire DC universe.
Well, so there's an article that came out today. It's on therap.com. And it says, read one down, how Dwayne Johnson's tardiness led to a $250 million runaway production. It's some movie that's going to be an Amazon movie that comes out in the fall. But it's all about how Dwayne doesn't show up on set till like 7 or 8 hours late.
Jeez.
And he pees in bottles and leaves them for the production assistants to clean up.
Yeah, that checks out.
It's very negative on Dwayne. It's very, and they say that, and the thing about Black Adam's in there, because they said he offered to take over the DC universe with his production company, and then was evicted from the DC part of the Warner's lot.
That does not surprise me. Have you heard this stuff? The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, well, yeah, he fought with the other guy. Yeah,
Vin. Yeah,
Vin Diesel.
There is the thing that made me laugh about that is that there is a thing in the contracts of everyone in those movies where none of their characters can lose a fight.
Okay.
So, and they battle each other a lot, especially him and The Rock. So it's just standstills.
Right. Well,
it's so funny.
Tom Cruise can't die in a movie. That's the one I've always heard.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Tom Cruise's characters. Well, he did Edge of Tomorrow, where he died and then lived, died, and repeated that.
Yeah.
Yes. Like,
what if we let you die 1,000 times?
I guess that was it worked for him. But yeah, Tom Cruise can't die.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dwayne, they say he shows up 7 to 8 hours late to the set.
Well, yeah, he's working out.
Yeah, you know, and they and that's part of it. And they say that was what the Vin Diesel fight was about, was Dwayne not showing up on time.
Mm-hmm.
And they say Ryan Reynolds had a big fight with him too.
Yeah. That always cracks me up when Vin and it used to be Arnold. Yeah. They would just play like a normal guy, like a zookeeper or something. Like, oh, so you work 8 hours a day and then spend 6 hours in the gym and then. Yeah. Then you have family time?
Yeah, Dwayne is Dwayne's sort of painting himself into a corner at this point.
Yeah.
With what he can do. But I mean who would have thought the wrestler didn't have range, but oh well.
Right.
All right, let's talk about a couple other things. Now Detroit, you live in the Detroit area here, but stand up comedy, Detroit has not always been the home base. Tell people about that. Where you started out and all that.
I started in Cincinnati.
Okay.
There's a great club down there called Go Bananas, and I was there for 9 years. I then moved to Chicago for 5 years, and then to Detroit.
Yeah.
And I've been here since 2020.
And what do you think about the Detroit comedy scene? How do those all compare?
I think Detroit is a very underrated scene. I think there's a lot of great, great comics in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago is great. A lot of people in my class are starting to blow up, like Jeff Mercury and Jeff Asmus, and Tom Takar. And and Cincinnati was just a monster scene for a long time. And it's still a great, great scene.
Nice. That's good to know. Yeah. I mean, I think that moving around is, I always tell comics, you know, you don't stay too long. I mean, you got roots here, but you know, if you can, when you can move before you get married, before you have the kids.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else and make a name for yourself. It's going to help you.
Definitely. Yeah. I put out an album right after I moved, and then it was so beneficial to start my next hour in a new scene.
Yeah. Wow.
It just changed the way I wrote, changed everything.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's the thing I never did.
Yeah, you never moved?
I moved, but never for stand-up comedy purposes.
Oh, okay.
I've told the story on the air, man. I was in New York City studying film. And I'd walk by the Comedy Cellar every night, and they'd say, you want to come in and see the comedy show for free? And I was like, no, I was afraid. I was afraid I was going to get sucked into the hole of comedy.
Yeah.
Which I eventually did. I just did it here instead of the Comedy Cellar. Yeah. Might be a mistake there, but you know.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want from me?
Yeah, it'd probably be opening for you this weekend.
Never said I was good at comedy. I just did it. I don't know. And you've done some improv. Am I right in that?
Yeah. I did a long running show in Cincinnati called Underbelly. Which was stand-up comics doing everything but stand-up.
Okay.
And so it was mostly improv, but it was also, it could be anything. It was interpretive dance. It was rap battles. Yeah. It was somebody did a painting one time, a live paining.
Yeah.
It was really, really fun.
Was there ever, and maybe starting out, now when you say you do a show like this, I think the answer to you is no, but certainly my experience was the rivalry between stand-up comedy and improv.
Yeah, and we definitely were stand-up comics first.
Yeah.
And it's funny, they hired our kind of troupe to open for an improv team one time, and we're like, oh yeah, absolutely, that'll be fun. And we did it, not realizing or thinking about that the 20 minutes of sketches we brought were all making fun of improv people. So it did not go over well.
It's a weird thing, and now more that I think about it, because I know people, you know, not only like yourself, like they've done both and they're great at both. I think some people are good at one and not at the other, you know, and then they sort of feel like, well, you know, I know some guys, I don't want to split the check five ways. I'm going to do stand up, you know, I've heard that one. But sometimes I think it's just about stage time. It's just about, hey, you know, there's only so much time to get up And an improv troupe needs an hour or 45 minutes. And a stand up is, you know, hey, you can have six guys up there doing sets.
Definitely. Yeah. But it also made me way better at stand up.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it gave me the stage presence. It gave me the ability more to think on my feet. And it helped me so much. That was what I loved about the Cincy scene, is that
yeah,
there were so many different types of shows. So there was a lot of stand-up shows, a lot of open mics, but then there was our sketch show. There was a storytelling show. Mm. There was other stuff that made you flex your muscles in a different way on stage and made you rethink about some of your stuff and how you write.
Interesting. That's all good stuff. You know, people take my comedy class and I go, well, if you want to get better at stand up, do more stand up. But, yeah. But you know, I mean, it's your completely valid points you're bringing up here. It worked for you.
Yeah, it worked for me. It
worked for you. That's great, man. Because I think some of the thing I tell my students, I say, you want to get better, rather than just, because I think part of the improv thing is you're standing up on stage without knowing what you're going to say.
Right.
Which is terrifying for a stand-up comedian, that silence, not knowing what you're going to say. But yeah. I say one good thing for comedians is to host. And that makes you better. Because, again, you're not going up there with your script. You know, you're going up trying to go like, all right, coming up next on this. Did you guys, what'd you think of that last guy? You know, kind of that stuff. That conversational thing makes your stand-up feel better.
Yeah.
Sound better. Yeah. All right, good pointers. I like this. Mm-hmm. I like talking to you.
I like talking to you.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, we're gonna talk more this weekend, but let's talk about a couple other things here. You did the YouTube special.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Tell people about that.
I did it through Helium Records. Helium Comedy Clubs reached out to me, and I was going to do an album, and then I wasn't happy with how it turned out, so they said, why don't, would you want to do a special?
Okay.
So I went to the original in Philadelphia and recorded it on an off night and just one take. And it was really great.
Really? That's terrific, man.
Yeah.
And they did the production and the whole thing for you.
Yep. They did everything. They
That's great.
Cut it, mixed it, put it out.
Yeah, that's special. Those specials, that's a thing you got to... At some point, you got to put that stuff on tape.
Yeah.
And then you listen back to it and you hope it's good. I know I've done that in a few cases. Yeah. Recorded sets, and I go, no, this set was great. Let's listen back to it. Oh, maybe you had to be there. You
know, right.
Because I think so much of comedy, well, as an instructor, I always say to people, like, a quality of good comedy, comedy only has to entertain the people that are there in the room.
Yeah,
it only has to be so people can look at something, you know, from 20 years ago and go, boy, that's not that good anymore. But it's like at the time, that was your whole obligation. But then when you film it and you make a thing that can be watched forever, then that other consideration comes up about, boy, is this any good? You know, and not even for some comics, it's not even 20 years from now. It's like last night.
Yeah.
What was it about last night that was great? You know, why were these people in such a good mood? They had these great openers, and then you watch the special, there's no openers. It's just them. You know, you're sitting in your living room with your hand down your pants trying to watch some stand-up comedy. Different environment.
Yeah, and every comic has that thing of doing a joke one time, it murdered, and then it never works again.
That's the curse of the comic, man. Especially if it's the first time you told it.
Uh-huh.
If it's the first time you tell it and it kills, you go, this one's gold forever.
Right.
And it'll eat shit for like a dozen times before you drink it. Yeah. You'll bomb with that thing every time. I tell comics starting out, I go, you're better off bombing when you start.
Yeah, you learn so much from a bomb.
Because you can kill, you know, your first show, your first couple shows, but that bomb's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna hurt like hell after you've been killing.
Yeah,
you know, you get that first bomb out of the way. It's like it's like a marriage.
I got mine the second time I went on stage.
That was a bomb. The second one.
It was a bomb. Yeah.
Oh, my first one was terrible.
And I did so good the first time that they're like, you should enter a contest. And so I did. And then I bombed so bad.
Well, the contest, and we've got the Detroit to LA thing every year at the Comedy Castle. And you know, it's helped a lot of people. We great crowds, like people promoted because, you know, your friends and family can vote in the thing and help you move on. And when I watch these guys, you know, lose at these things or have a lousy set, and it's like every family member and everyone from work is watching you bomb.
Yeah.
And like they do this, like the semifinal will always be like the week before Thanksgiving or something.
It's like, yeah.
5 days later, you're going to be sitting there passing the mashed potatoes, you know, trying to answer to why you didn't do. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you got to do well. That's the thing. Eventually you get to a point like where you're at, specials, headlining, opening up big weekends like this one at the Comedy Castle. That's where you want to be, but it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. A lot of making sacrifices.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, and we'll get out of here on this. Did you have guys, because I had a particular guy in mind, his name was Ken Klein, the guy who was a killer open micer. And yet he never made it. You have that guy in your life?
Do you mean specifically open micer or just
not just like he never became a pro because it was just too hard for him? Like it was easy for him starting out and he was a murderer on these mics. But when, for whatever reason, he couldn't hack the rest of it.
Yeah, I would say like maybe two of the top five funniest people I've ever met have quit.
Yeah.
And they're still the funniest.
Yeah.
Two of the funniest people I know. They just couldn't hack the business and the lifestyle. And it's tough. It's not easy.
It is not easy, but you're doing it, man. So,
All
right, Mike. Well, we'll let you out of here on this. It's going to be a fun weekend with you, Joe Mackey. Johnny Mockney is going to be opening the shows. He's a funny young dude. I don't know how long Johnny's been in it, but he's having lots of success.
I've seen it. And he's super funny. He's got a great reputation in the scene.
He sure does. Good writer and everything. So it's going to be a fun weekend. Thanks for talking to me, Mike. This is a blast.
Yeah, it was fun. I hope any of that was funny.
I'll cut it down to about 3 minutes.
Perfect.
All right, Mike. I'll catch you this weekend, man.
All right. See you, Joe.
Later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. There you go. That's fun. Fun talk. Mike Cronin's a good dude. Good dude. Relatable. It's going to be a great weekend with Joe Mackey, who I really tried to get on this show. And as the time of this recording, I failed. Is there a point to putting up a time later? Maybe it will be. I don't know. But anyway, I want you guys to come out this weekend. It's really one of the best lineups we've had all year. And that's not saying anything. You know, we had Ian Bag last week. Awesome shows. But look, the best show that you're going to see anywhere you go is the next one. Or the last one you saw was the best one you ever saw. That's the way I look at it, you know? It's always a great week to come out to the Comedy Castle. The lineup's fantastic. We want to thank you guys for supporting us, supporting this show. I know people talk to me about it and say they're enjoying the interviews. I thought this was a particularly good one this week. So please tune in the future. We'll have more of these. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you this week with Joe Mackey, Mike Cronin. It's going to be a great weekend. We'll see you then, guys. All right.